Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We're here for another week of deliberate practice, week 8 of the season. For most of us around the country, again, some guys further ahead, some guys maybe a little bit behind, but we're getting to that point in the season where we want to maybe start drawing back on some of the aspects of contact. The challenge here, though, we talked last week about juice and having that energy and effort. The challenge is we want to keep that energy and effort. We want to keep building momentum with what we're doing, even if it's at late in the season and we're finding out what our next team is going to be out because, you know, maybe we don't have some of those big goals in front of us, or we're that team who's heading toward a showdown with a conference rival, maybe for a championship game or heading into the playoffs. We want momentum. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And joining me on the podcast is our guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, always great to talk ball.
Always good to be here. It's been a great series. Last week's episode was fantastic on new ways to bring energy. So excited to talk about ways we can get better while trying to limit some of practice late in the season.
So the focus on this, Andy, is momentum. And it's funny, you and I were out in Phoenix, Arizona, shooting our next level with a contact system. And, you know, we were watching Ohio State and your Penn State Nittany Lions, and I jokingly was back and forth with you about momentum, because I know you're not a big believer of momentum being a thing in the game, but you do believe that momentum is something you can create in practice.
Yeah, I think if you look at most of the sports psychology or even some of the analytics folks who have dived into performance, they'll tell you that momentum is not a real thing, that previous success on a game is not any indication of the next play's success, or previous game success is not any indication of the next game's success, and that it's simply some of the human interaction. Maybe it's confidence, maybe the other team has a lack of confidence, but there's nothing that changes the dynamic or changes the rate at which good plays happen. You know, it's like a coin flip, that sometimes you're going to go on a hot streak and you're going to get a lot of heads in a row, but then you're going to regress to the mean and you're going to get some tails. So just because we have a good streak of plays or a good streak of wins doesn't mean that it's going to carry over to the next one. Now, in practice, because it's a controlled setting, because coaches have some ability to control the outcomes of drills, how certain drills are run, we may be able to manipulate the space a little bit more and help players start to show repeated successes, and that if we layer our drills properly, we may get a string of better performances as we slowly build upon skill and scaffold that learning up.
And I know at this time of the year, we look to draw back on contact. And I know having been at the college level, and especially the challenge was always with some of our freshmen and what they were doing on scout team, when we try to draw some of that back, we weren't getting the quality out of practice that we wanted. And really, we've talked about this being a time we have to get better. We don't want to stagnate in our progression of learning. We don't want to stagnate in our development. So the danger is taking contact out and things slowing down. So we want to first make the case that this needs to be full speed, high velocity, high energy types of practices, but we want to find ways to take the sting out of contact a little bit, right? We want to make sure that we are doing some things where we're not getting body on body. So I talked a little bit about this before at some point in the podcast, but one of the great things we did, and we did it really, I think, to get around some spring rules where we were allowed to use shields, but we were not in pads at all at the D3 level, is we put shoulder pads on a shield. And essentially what I would do is tighten the straps around the shield pretty tight, and then take an old practice belt and string that around the bottom and essentially anchor that thing so it was not moving. And then we would hold the pad in a way that it essentially was kind of a buffer between the guy who is the defender and the offensive guy on the other side of the ball. So he's providing some of those shoulder pad targets, those handles that we want in there. But at the same time, now he's he's got that shield between him and the defender. And we were able to get a lot more out of those drills because I think the danger with shields, and you and I talk with Scott Peters about this all the time, is it's just not the right shape. The handles aren't the same as what you have in practice. So now you lose some of that game application. The interesting thing, as we started to use those shields, and I used them initially just for the offensive line for us to be able to really go full speed, high velocity in our drills without contact, is that other coaches on the field saw that that was an opportunity for them to do some things as well, where they would have contact. They didn't want to have body on body, especially when we were at that point without pads. So they started to look at how could they incorporate those into their drills, whether it was on the offensive side in blocking or on the defensive side in defeating blocks or taking on a pass rush or those kinds of things. They now had some different aim points and targets and could get a more realistic feel. So you got that high speed, high velocity effect of practice without the high contact.
No, and I think that's such a key point, Keith, is when we try to dial back contact, we don't want to dial back skill development. But when we get to bags and shields or pads, or we're trying to take the sting out of collision, so we're doing things that might not be at full speed, we have a tendency to lose kind of that pinpoint accuracy, some of that detail that, you know, blocking your fellow offensive lineman holding that shield doesn't really give. It doesn't give him his aim points, his fit points. He can't lock in and maybe steer as well. We get the situation that we've all seen where an offensive lineman has locked out the hand shield and he's got it up over his head like an incline press. And you're thinking, well, I appreciate the enthusiasm, but is that teaching him that bridge under strength he's going to need to control and dominate someone? So I love the idea of the shoulder pads because it forces our guys to be accurate, and it makes sure that even with reducing collision, our guys have a very true focus on getting better. And I think that coaches will come up with some great ideas, but that's always going to be the challenge when we start to dial back towards the end of the season.
Andy, kind of dovetailing that with the you mentioned the bags in addition to those shields. I know that coaches like to use those as well. And I've seen some great ideas. I know a lot of this comes out with some of the work you've been doing with some of our subject matter experts and some content we're going to have coming out. But looking at the Twitter feed of Coach Digitano at SUNY Maritime or Coach Everett at Bridgewater College, they've been able to get a lot more out of tackling bags than I think we've thought of how we've done it in the past. And, you know, I'd like you to kind of talk about those, and we'll include some of those links. They have some videos up on Twitter. We'll include some links to those drills as well. But go ahead and talk us through some of the ways that coaches are using bags in this case and getting more out of the bags and non-contact or taking some of the contact out of the drills.
Yeah, no, this is definitely one of my favorite drills, and Coach Dan Casey also posted it on Twitter and got quite a few mentions and likes. And it started with the idea that a lot of our bag drills will drag a bag or we'll run with a bag, so we get good movement pre-contact. But at contact, we drop the bag or we let go of the bag so the tackler can finish the tackle. And what we started thinking about, or what was brought to my attention, was that when you tackle a real ball carrier, so much of the fight is after contact as the runner tries to break your tackle or step through your grasp, and he's trying to gain extra yards too. So why don't we have any drills in which there's action or there's forces post-contact? You know, all of our drills have been pre-contact movement. So we hooked a jump stretch band, you know, kind of a big, heavy PT physical therapy band, or one you might use in the gym to bench or squat, and attach that through the handles on the bag. And then on contact, either a teammate or the coach pulls the elastic band. So now he's actually trying to pull the bag away from the tackler. This is going to make sure our tacklers have great clamp and grip, and it's going to simulate the best we can in a non-contact environment. You know, those guys having to grapple and fight and control the runner all the way down to the ground. And the thing that jumped out most to me when coaches started sharing videos is I was seeing guys miss. I was seeing guys get the bag pulled out of their arms, and I absolutely loved it because I thought the only way we're going to get better is if we're actually pushing our skills. And when we tackle a normal bag, I've never seen someone miss a tackle on a step over, you know, that's being dragged by the coach because there's just no forces there. But if we can provide enough challenge that guys actually fall off or slip off or the bag gets pulled away, man, now we're really challenging those skills. So those guys are developing, they're getting better, they're being stretched to their potential, their clamp, grip, and finish is working overtime, and we're doing it with nothing but a bag and a bungee, so we're still in our non-contact environment. And I think that can be a great drill in conjunction with your tracking drills so that you can put together the full tackle in non-contact environments.
And I think that's what it's all about, Andy, is really making this more realistic to what's going to happen in the game. And we never have that situation in the game where that running back or that receiver or a quarterback with the ball is just going to completely drop and fall on contact. And that's essentially what we get from the bag, is it's something that does not give us that lifelike or game-like type of replication of what we're trying to do. So this is a great application using that jump stretch band to do some things. One thing I talked about on the special teams side of things, and it's an idea I got from Scott Peters, and something he uses with helping his players learn how to stay grounded with bull rush or to recover their leverage, is to use the physio ball. Have one guy hold the physio ball, and essentially there doesn't have to be a big runway, but you're going to get some momentum that, again, is not full contact but full speed. And so when I was looking at how I could use that on the special team side of things, it was with those guys who, if they remain in a staggered, as they might kick back and brace for contact, they stay in that staggered stance, they're going to get run through, and essentially that guy might get free to make a block. But now, if you can get your feet grounded and back to basically getting your insteps in the ground on what Scott Peters likes to call brace hop, now you're in a position to win. But how do you do that? How do you create that momentum without, again, having that full physical contact? Well, the physio ball is an answer, and I think this is something that could probably apply maybe in some other situations as well, as coaches get creative with it. But you just take a normal physio ball. Again, you don't have to create a lot of distance because the rebound effect of the ball is actually going to create the momentum. And you have that player start coming towards the offensive player or the special teams player or however you might designate this drill. And the rebound effect of the ball is going to create the momentum that it might feel more game-like with contact.
I've seen this drill firsthand, and I think if any coach out there is on YouTube, you'll see some guys go flying, some kids doing jousting with double physio balls and just kind of playing around. So it's a great point, because you do not need much speed to generate a lot of force. And because the physio ball in itself is kind of that rubber silicone material or whatever we're going to call it, you start creating force into your players with a soft collision. To your, that rebound is what really kicks the guys back. And it's amazing how much force you can transmit in a non-contact, non-collision environment. And I think that's what we're trying to do at this point in the season. We still want our guys to have to brace, to have to work, to have to find their footwork and actually deal with forces, because that's going to prepare them for game day. You know, if you have no contact all week, I was in a Twitter conversation last week with some guys looking at some studies, but guys who had very limited or no contact during the week actually had higher negative hormonal responses after the game day, so that a certain amount of collision, you know, helped guys be prepared for the stimulus that was going to be game day. Now, at this point in the year, we're trying to dial that way back. So how do we create collisions in soft surface environments? I'll tell you what, the physio ball does it. I've seen it with my own eyes. You'll get some guys really challenged in their body position and their footwork. And I know we talk about this a lot down in Arizona. One of the reasons why I really love this drill for the punt team specifically is that the guys on your punt team, unless you're a shield punt and you're using a back two or a back three,
almost everyone else is going to be a skilled player. So they don't have the training and how to kick back and then generate force to stop someone's charge. You know, only our linemen get to do that in pass pro. Maybe some of our backs or a tight end every now and then. We start throwing some of these other players in there. They don't have those skills, and that's something I think we really need to develop, and it's a great tool.
Definitely, and that's a drill we'll have out in our next level of content. We'll be releasing 2019 is the brace hop with a physio ball drill. But again, I think we've given you some detail here where you can utilize that again. Maybe it's bull rush, you know, working against the bull rush with your offensive linemen and having them reestablish and getting their feet grounded, or use it on, like I said, the punt team and getting them to understand how to get their feet into the ground to stop that rush that's coming at them. And then whatever other applications you might think of might be, you know, thinking of it, Andy, this time of the year, what do we do in our extra point and field goal? Guys take one step and stop, and we make sure that we have a fit. But, you know, do we need a little bit more pressure in that? Physio ball, I think, would be another area where, you know, maybe it's not the whole line doing it, but you could have, you know, pass that thing down the line, and through the course of getting all your reps in, now your guys who were on the field goal extra point still have some of that momentum coming at them that they have to brace for.
Yeah, they get a great little bump there. They'd be forced to stay strong. You wouldn't need much force, that's for sure, once you start playing with it. But I'm sure there's a lot of positions, and I really like that field goal, PAT situation there, because you're right. So often it's step, get fit, maybe you throw your hands up, and then we start asking ourselves, are we still testing and getting better at our protection? Putting stress and challenge on our kicker, because hey, getting late in the season, we're into the playoffs, we're going to play good teams, there's going to be close games, are we preparing those guys for what comes up? And I think that's where the creativity comes up. Saw another drill by Coach Digentano where he had taken a shield and he simply put multiple pool noodles through the back handles, kind of like arms and legs, but more than anything, it was just distractions and eyewash. So they were doing a defensive back open field tackle drill, but there was kind of these spider arms, these noodles coming out everywhere from behind the bag, and the player had to focus on the actual shield to find his target. And the whole point was similar to our conversation. How do we maintain accuracy? How do we challenge accuracy if we're not going to challenge it via another player juking and jiving and doing his best to win the situation? Well, let's get creative. Let's get some eyewash in there. Let's challenge vision. Let's manipulate eyes. Let's add bands and extra forces. Let's have a rebound of a physio ball. There is some great stuff out there that will keep practice sharp, that'll keep players focused on getting better, because they will lose these drills if they're not locked in. And that's going to keep that juice going by having guys locked in, ready to get better, and seeing themselves getting better even this late in the season.
Andy, one last drill I want to point out is the King of the Ring drill, which we have available at footballdevelopment.com. You sign up and you get 3 free videos in there. Well, one of those within the contact system is the King of the Ring drill. And, you know, I think back to my playing days in high school, and one of the head coaches I played for wanted to emphasize toughness. And so throughout the season, every single day of practice, other than walkthrough days, we would start practice with Oklahoma drill. And you and I have had plenty of these conversations, so we will not go down the Oklahoma drill rabbit hole right now, but offer something that you can do essentially to continue to teach your players how to win leverage, how to gain leverage, how to win leverage, again, in a drill that doesn't have the contact to it. So King of the Ring, basically, you're going to get your guys in a neutral position, meaning each of them has one arm fit where they're supposed to, and then, you know, losing on the other side. And both of them are in a position with feet in the ground. And then on the whistle, they're going to essentially drop their hips and use their leverage, get their leverage with their hips to try to move that other player. It's detailed out. in footballdevelopment.com. Again, check that out there. But I think King of the Ring is a great drill to use right now to get some of that competition that you want. Maybe it is at the beginning of practice, get the juices flowing a little bit, continue with that energy and effort, but have something that's very competitive, yet at the same time is really teaching that application of how to win leverage.
That's a fantastic point. It's a great drill. I think you'll get competitiveness and you'll get some contact skills, but it's minus the collision. And at this point of the season, I couldn't think of a better drill to fit what we're actually after.
Andy, it was exciting to talk through some of these ideas, to rethink our drills, rethink how we're doing our practices, but yet at the same time, continue to build that momentum, especially if we were focused last week on bringing the juice and finding that energy and effort. So we're going to have links to all of these, whether it was a tweet with a video in it. We have a picture of how those shoulder pads look rigged up, put a link to where you can find the King of the Ring drill in our show notes. So be sure to check out that at blogs.usafootball.com.
100%, coaches. Use your creativity. Think about the actual goals, be it target accuracy, be it specific fit points that you teach within your program, and then let's find ways to get it done. We can still have contact without collision if we manage our bags, our shields, and our distance appropriately. That's going to keep the guys going. They'll be feeling fresh. They'll come in energetic, and they're still developing quality skills they need for you to make a deep run in the playoffs.
Andy, it was great talking about these ideas with you today, looking at how we can build that momentum. I'm excited to continue this conversation next week. We're going to look a little bit at how we address the workload throughout the season, and we'll get creative again with how we might be able to do some things that keep our players engaged, though we want to maybe draw back some of what we're doing. Best of luck to you coaches this week. Check out what we're doing, our new Twitter handle, at FBDEVCoach. Check out footballdevelopment.com for some free resources, some drills you can use for blocking and defeating blocks, as well as checking out our blogs, as I mentioned before, at blogs.usafootball.com. Andy, look forward to talking to you again next week.
See you again next week, Coach.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.